Hi guys, and welcome back to another new episode of You Need Therapy. My name is Kat and I am the host, and I'm so glad you're here and you have chosen, if you're new or not new, to come here on a really good day, whatever day it is that you're listening to this, because today I have my very first supervisor from when I was an intern, when I first started as a therapist. So I'll get into that in a second. But before I do want to say, as always, remember guys, this is not therapy and I'm not acting as your therapist on this show. I'm just a therapist who happens to be licensed and know a lot of things, but also just wants to talk about mental health and all of those things. Cool? Cool. Okay. So like I said, my first ever supervisor is on. Her name is Janet Heilbronn, and I could talk about her probably for 45 minutes and then you guys would be done and you wouldn't get to listen to the conversation. So I'm going to let her do the talking for herself. But I do want to say that if she was not my supervisor and if I didn't know her personally, she would be my therapist. Like, she is so cool and she's so good at what she does and she believes in what she does and she's a good human. Like, I've never met anybody who hasn't loved Janet wholeheartedly. Like, I just have not. So I'm so glad she's on today. And also, God bless you, Janet, because I think that we planned to record this about 75 times and it finally came to fruition. So I'm so grateful for that. But you're going to love her as much as I love her. We talk a little bit about me when I first started, and it's just funny looking back 8-9 years and being like, whoa, where I came from and where I am. And I say that not to be like, look at where I am now, but one, for me to remember that I used to not know what I was doing. So when there's other things in my life that I'm like, oh, I'll never be good at that, or I can't do that, I have to remember, like, everything that I've done in my life, I started not knowing how to do. And that goes for y'all too. We are allowed to start and not know what we're doing. We are allowed to start and be bad at things. We are allowed to start and be confused, and we learn as we go. But if we never start, we'll never learn. So this might be a little sign. If there's something out there that you've been itching to try or do, or if you've been feeling really insecure about being quote unquote bad at something and you're new, like, that's okay. And allow yourself some grace to grow. Because if you were one of my first clients, you probably would be like, what is this girl doing? But we're here now. So anyway, Janet, thank you so much. Thank you so, so much for being on today. And if you hear Janet and you're like, oh my gosh, I need her to be my therapist, then if she has availability, you can reach out to her by going to janethailbronn.com. So it's JanetHeilbronn. And I'll put that in the show notes, so there'll be a link for that. I hope you guys are having the day you need to have, and I will talk to you again on Wednesday for Couch Talks. But for now, here's my conversation with one of my favorite people in the whole world, Janet. Okay, guys, welcome back to a brand new, beautiful episode of You Need Therapy. I have one of my favorite people in the world here, Janet. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm so good. So the first thing we're going to talk about here is how Janet and I met, and I would like her to give the first version because I've known you since I was 21, 22.
Wow.
That's 10 years.
That's time warp right there.
That is crazy. Okay. Must be 22 though, actually. It's not important. But okay, so I want you to tell everybody how we met in your version, whatever you want to say.
Okay. Which this cracks me up because I think about then and I think about now. So here it is. You were Catherine at that time.
Yeah. Which I still am.
Yeah.
Depending on who's talking to me.
When did Kat come on board?
So, which is a question I get all the time. Growing up, everybody called me Catherine. High school people called me Catherine. In college, some people started calling me Kat. And then when I started teaching cycling, everybody called me Kat. And then all of those people started calling me Kat. My mom and like my sister call me Kat. Mm-hmm. I'm Aunt Kat. It probably really started like right after college. And then it's just easier. I like it. But a lot of people still call me Catherine. So you can still call me that.
That's so funny.
I have two names.
That's fascinating.
Identity crisis.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the part of me that's Kat, the part of me that's Catherine. Uh-huh. So you came into internship at the ranch And I was your intern supervisor, I think. Was that my role?
Yes. And I remember when I got the email that you were going to be my direct supervisor, I remember showing it to somebody because I was already there. I was already there for a little bit. And I think Becca was like my interim boss until you came along to like place me with you. But I remember telling somebody like, oh, I got placed with Janet. And they're like, you're so lucky.
Oh, my gosh. That cracks me up. Well, I remember too when it was like, here's going to be your intern. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do with this? Like, I don't know. But I was very excited. So you came on board and we worked at the men's house.
Yeah.
River at the time.
It was like young men too.
Young men. And that, I wondered how that was going to be with you, how you would feel about that because it was really your age group, your demographic. Mm-hmm.
I was terrified. When they said you're going to go work with men, I was like, no, I came here to work at the eating disorder program.
I remember.
I was terrified. And I knew nothing about addiction. And so I remember you were not in this group. It was me and the other therapist that you worked with. It was my first group. There's some reason you weren't there. And you're like, you can do it. You can do it. I remember I was wearing a yellow pea coat with green pants.
That was so good. So good.
And one of the clients who I've then talked to since, which is funny, was processing his first step. And he had taken a couple sessions to do it, like a couple group sessions to do it. And I remember in that session, he talked about the stealing he had done. Mm-hmm. And his sex life in his addiction. Mm-hmm. And when I saw him like 5 years later, he was like, I'll never forget your face during that. You just were like wide-eyed, jaw dropped. Like, what the heck is this? I was terrified. And I also was like opened up to like, oh, I am so sheltered.
Yeah.
How am I going to help any of these people?
Right. And that was something I remember about you. Yeah. And I was so excited for you. I felt like this is going to be a portal in to something that is just going to, it'll blow it right open for you. And that there was so much opportunity for you to learn and lean in.
And I wanted to talk about this because we were talking about this before we started recording about how people will see, I'm talking about me because like I have my experience, but like I feel a lot of people see me and what I do and how I do it. And they have this idea of who I am. And then they also just like think it was always that way. And I want people to see that like we all started somewhere. And my start was like, I was like, I'm never going to be a therapist. Like, I don't know. One of my thoughts constantly was like, how does she always know what to say? How does she know what to do? Like when we started doing experiential stuff, I was like, where is this coming from? My brain doesn't work that way. It'll never work that way. And so I was silent a lot of times.
I remember that about you. And again, it was really exciting to watch you blossom into that. And I remember you even saying, how do you know what to say? I remember you asking me that question and there was a lot of good questions actually that came through from you, but you were very quiet.
And I'm not quiet.
No, you're not. That's why when I said to somebody, I'm going to do this podcast with Kat, and oh my God, it's such a difference from when I first knew her.
Yeah.
Very quiet, looking around, kind of waiting. Well, what do I do next? To like, look at what you've got now. It's amazing.
And I remember with you and then in other programs when I went and had other supervisors, I had to try a lot of things and messed a lot of them up. Mm-hmm. Like I remember doing my first psychodrama and I had to have the other therapist step in and help me because I didn't know what to do next. But like I didn't hurt anybody in the process.
Nope.
And I needed to have that experience so that eventually I could get comfortable in doing them because I liked at that point in my life to have a perfect plan. When I feel overwhelmed, I need a perfect plan. When I feel comfortable, I can do anything at the like a whim. Because remember when they tried to move me? Eventually they were like, okay, you're going to move to this. They were trying to move me to Creek House.
Yep.
And you were like, you're not taking her. And I was like, I don't want to leave.
I know.
And we got I got to stay there an extra semester or something.
I know. I remember that. That's right.
So it turned into like, I don't want to work with men. I don't want to do this. To like, I'm finally getting really good at this.
Yeah.
I want to stay a little longer.
Yeah.
Which was really cool.
It was cool. Well, I think you totally had the heart for it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the thing I saw in you, was you really have the heart. You have the heart. Yeah. And I saw it then. And while you may not have known exactly like, what do I say? What's the next thing we do? It didn't matter. You came in with the absolute knowing, like, I'm really wanting to know. I'm curious.
Mm-hmm. I was there more than I was supposed to be there. Like in the summer, remember I kept coming in the summer and I wasn't supposed to, but they were like, well, you can still come and help.
I remember.
And I wasn't getting credit for it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, if I want to soak all this up, that place was so special back then.
Yep.
I just liked being there.
Absolutely.
So it turned into me hiding in the bathroom. I think one time I faked sick and I went home.
Hey, it's survival. Sometimes we just do what we do.
One of my first clients, I worked one-on-one. They were all your clients. And then I would see them extra. Right. And I, at that point, was like, what else? What am I going to do? Janet is, in quotation, saving their lives in my head. Oh, right. What am I going to do? And I remember this one client who didn't want to be there. He was young. He was like 18. And I remember I was in a session with him, and it was the second session, and he like wasn't talking to me because he didn't want to be there, rightfully so. So I start doing this like activity with him that I had in my back pocket, and he literally looked at me and he goes, so we've already done this before, so can I go?
Oh my God. That's the worst.
I know. And I was like, yeah, you can go. And he left, and I had a choice to lean into like, I'm horrible. That was the most terrible experience ever, to I kind of don't know what I'm doing and that's okay and I'm gonna get better. And that's what I had to lean into. But then I had pockets of like clients who did like working with me, and you were so positive and so affirming, and that's what I think I needed. I needed somebody to help build my confidence. You did really help.
I'm so glad. Thank you for saying that to me. Yeah.
You were a good supervisor. I don't know how you did it, because you had your job. That job was stressful. Then your life was chaotic.
My life was chaotic.
Which I knew, but not to the extent probably that I would have understood now.
Right.
So can you talk about that time in your life, just so we can hear about the struggle that like therapists also have? Because right. we have lives too. I make up in my head that a lot of times, not anymore, well, maybe not, but like self-disclosure, I think is more, people are doing it more. And like there's a lot of therapists have Instagrams that their clients can follow and all that stuff. And I think before I was a therapist, if I were to think of a therapist, I would think of somebody who like has all the answers and their life is perfect.
Oh,
and
my
then
gosh.
You have the right to become a therapist.
Right. Oh, and only when it's all settled down.
Yes.
Right? And it so wasn't at that time.
Yeah.
I remember. So I remember you, you know, I'm thinking I have got to do a better job with her because my life felt really chaotic. I was going through a horrible breakup, not soon enough, right? It's that thing where it just hangs on and you're like, oh, so all my codependency was kicked up. I was completely activated in all that. And I lost my way a little bit, and I needed to show up because I wanted to, because I love the work. I was trying really hard to, you know, mirror good stuff your way. And I can remember crying with you in the office, and you're like, and you were so good. I'm like, okay, good. She's good. She's going to be a good therapist because you held the space really well.
So what yeah. did, how did you operate? My life feels chaotic.
Yeah.
I have to show up. How did you do that?
So
or did you?
I leaned into my own therapist.
Yeah.
I finally started cutting myself a break.
Yeah.
And I took a lot of walks, journaled a lot, all those things that, you know, we do or we ask people to do when they're doing this kind of work for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just, I want to say also friends just leaning in and getting permission mm-hmm. to call on lunch hour and just be a total wreck. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, dry your tears, now be back. And eventually, you know, I know we say, oh, you don't want to compartmentalize your stuff, but at some level, that's yeah. really a good thing because it gave me a break
yeah.
from all my own pain and then show up. And then I was, then it started to blend. It wasn't so black yeah. and white. And I felt like I found my footing again.
That makes me think about, I sometimes struggle with the balance between being an in quotes adult, do your job, get your shit together.
Yep.
Don't bring your stuff into the workplace
yep.
and allow yourself to feel your feelings, like show up, don't yep. deny yourself, whatever. I struggle with that sometimes, of the balance of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're talking about is like, I had to learn to find the balance that yep. like, I need to make sure that I'm doing my things that we tell people to do. And then we also need to do that.
That's right.
I'm going to do my thing. So then when I show up to work, I have enough space to go do my job, and then I can come back and have a moment. And it's not all or nothing. It's not I'm healed, I'm falling apart. It's I'm feeling okay, feeling a little better. I'm having a rough time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to allow myself to fall apart for a second. I'm going to put some of the pieces back together. It's just like this like more fluid experience.
Totally. That's well put. That's exactly what it was like.
Yeah.
And I remember I leaned into this person who was sort of well known for working with when a codependent gets mm-hmm. with someone who might look like a certain kind of other personality, you know. And she said to me, look, you actually know a lot of this stuff. You already are on track. And mm-hmm. and it was like the affirming of that. Because mm-hmm. I think along the way, I forgot sometimes, I think we all do, but I definitely forget, oh, I do know some things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also what I struggled with when I went through probably the hardest breakup for me to move on from was I struggled. My therapist would always say, I know you, because I'd be like, I know. She'd say, I know you know. And then she'd point to her heart and she said, but you don't actually know.
Right.
And I was like, how do you do that? It would make me so mad. But I use that all the time with clients now. Of like, mm-hmm. we know in our head, and especially people who listen to this podcast, that's why I say all the time, this is not therapy. Because I can tell you all of the facts about codependency
yep.
and love addiction and the healing process and the nervous system. And I could know everything. But the way you heal your nervous system and the way you change the way it operates is experiences. And so that's when she's pointing to her heart. She's like, you have to actually experience what you know.
Absolutely. Which is why I went on to get somatic training after yeah. all that. And that was like the game changer for me.
Yeah. Will you talk about that? Because we talked about that in the summer on here. I had Elena on.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And she does somatic movement.
Yes.
And she's done that whole, I think she's done all those modules.
Mm-hmm.
But will you talk about what it is and how you use it and how it's helpful for you and then mm-hmm. also with clients?
Absolutely. I heard that podcast. I loved listening to you guys together. That was so fun. So I did. I went through all the modules also. And I loved, I'll never forget being in some of that training. And they went through the ACEs, the adverse childhood experience test mm-hmm. or whatever. And I remember having like this body response to it. Like I felt like it came out of nowhere. It felt like, oh no, what do? I started to hold my breath. Because it's that thing where I don't want to make any noise because yeah. I'm about to cry. And I was holding my breath. And then it was like, oh, I cannot keep doing this. But I'd been holding my breath so long, it was going to come out loud, right? And here I am in this somatic training.
Was the first one?
I can't remember which one. Okay. Maybe the second or so. And this big sound came out like, like, I don't know, whether it was an in-breath or an out-breath. And right then and there, I realized, oh my gosh, this is it. Like my body had a complete response to just reading those things off the list. Not from my brain. It wasn't the thing I thought about. It was how I felt about it. Mm-hmm. And I knew, okay, good, 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 good. I'm in the right place. And then, of course, we did some work around it. Mm-hmm. So the somatic training was a game changer. I learned how when you slow it down, that's where all the information is that you mm-hmm. need. Like, slow it down. There's the narrative, but then there's also the wisdom. So I love somatic experiential work with clients. That's what I do. We just keep coming back to the breath. Okay, what are you noticing now? If you're going to pick an object in the room to describe what this feels like in this moment, what would it be? And then it's like, ooh, it gets really rich.
So I love that stuff. And I love being that client. And I'm a little bit resistant because I can stay up in my head, but I like the push. And I think because I'm a therapist, I know what kind of what's happening. What do you do? Because this stuff is a stuff that feels like woo-woo to people yeah. who don't do therapy. They think therapy is just coming in, sitting down, them venting about their week, us telling them, yeah, and then them going on.
yeah.
Which sometimes that's what it is, yeah. but whatever.
Yeah.
What do you do with a client that is resistant to that?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. That's where like the richness comes from. But when they're like an object, I'm a person. What do you mean?
Right.
Because in a group therapy, it's easier because they get to see it from other people and then they understand it mm-hmm. and they feel less like weird or whatever the feeling might be. But what do you do when there's resistance to that?
One thing that I remind myself all the time is like, well, then don't push back. Like, let the resistance be in the room. But something that I do sometimes, if it feels right, is I might say, okay, so here's something I'm noticing about myself. And I'll just come back to me and I'll say, I'm noticing my body. I feel I'm a little anxious because I want this to be right for you. So if mm-hmm. I were going to pick an object in the room to help you understand me from the inside out, I might pick this prickly pear cactus or yeah. something, right? And then describe it and give them some information. And typically I found that that's kind of enough, right? Mm-hmm. And they go, oh yeah, well, I'm actually that nail on the floor, or move away from that mm-hmm. and go do something else for a little while. And you can kind of weave back in, you know, mm-hmm. even if it's just, what do you notice in your breath right now? Like, where is it? Is it up in your shoulders? Has it gone down into your stomach? Kind of go with physical for a little while.
On Wednesdays, I do like a Q&A. And one of the questions was, it was somebody who doesn't talk a lot. And so she felt like she never knew what to say. And then like sometimes her therapist would be good about filling the space. And sometimes it was awkward. And what's interesting is I answered that question. So I'm not going to like re-answer the question. But what I talked about is how when I noticed that part of it, it's like, it's not our job to fill the space. But part of it is when a client doesn't know, like they almost like they need permission. And that's what you're saying. It's like, I'm giving them some kind of permission by describing my experience. Mm-hmm. And if we just talk about the thing that they came in here with, they might not know how to really talk about it. And it might be like, I'm asking questions and they just say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's very short and it's like, it's going nowhere. But then when I do something like I ask them, I'll do like, I have all those papers over there. Those are all like pieces of art that clients have done. So yep. I'll say, okay, you don't know how to answer this question. Why don't you draw me what it feels like?
Mm, perfect. Yeah.
And the first thing, well, I'm not a very good artist.
Right.
Like, that's not the point.
Yeah.
But it's crazy how then somebody can just start drawing squiggly lines and X's and using different colors and using different pressures and it's light over here and dark over here. And all of a sudden I'm like, you do know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You just don't have words to describe it, but you can. And I think that's like kind of what you're talking about in a different way. And then the conversation in the session completely transforms and it we have does. Something to work with.
It does. It becomes so rich because there's so many layers now mm-hmm. that have just shown up in the room.
Mm-hmm. I do want to go back. I want people to know how you even became a therapist.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the best like questions, I think, to ask a therapist is like, how did this become your path?
Right. Right. So this is, I love this question because I absolutely love the answer that I'm going to give you. And it is this. I grew up in a family of chaos. Mm-hmm. There was all kinds of stuff going on and I didn't understand how to process any of that. Like nobody sat down because often kids, it's not like, I mean, parents are doing the best they can. It's not like they're there to sit down with that child and say, well, let me just explain to you what that rage thing was you just saw and why the door is hanging on a hinge, you know? And so it's that thing where kids walk around and they make up a story about what that thing is. And a lot of times we make up that I caused it or I had something to do with it. So when I was 10, I created this game. I didn't know this was the word, but it was the therapist game. And I made client files. I still have them.
No way.
I do. They're treasures to me.
Yeah, do not ever get rid of those.
Oh, are you kidding? And so they had names. They had like about a paragraph of their story.
At 10.
I put how many visits they came. I had a receipt for, it was $20 a session. Really good.
It's a good deal.
That's a good deal. But of course, we're talking a long time ago. So maybe that was expensive then. Yeah. I don't know. And sometimes I would write like newspaper articles about their spouse that was arrested and I'd put it in there.
At 10
years old. And I had a page out of the phone book that were all doctor's numbers. So it was like a referral sheet. I know. And I look back at that and I go, okay, who was I watching on TV?
Right.
Who in my family might have modeled this?
Were you in therapy?
No. I didn't get into therapy till I was 12.
2 years later.
2 years later.
Yeah, and then you're the professional at that point.
Right. And then I'm telling, and it was my mother's, you know, therapist or whatever. And I'm in it's crazy town. And oh I could have, yeah, I was like, no, dude, you're not working with me the right way. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think there was a show on TV about, it's called the Bob Newhart Show, I think. And I don't know that I watched that a whole lot. I was 10. So I don't know where it came from.
That is wild.
I know.
So did you know, like, were you always going through life being like, that's what I'm going to do?
I don't know if I knew that so much until later. Like, I was the one in the family, my older sister might argue this, but like she would come to me with the problem and then I would quote unquote solve the problem. And then my mother would have a problem and then I would give her advice. Mm-hmm. And it was that role. I just took that role. I think it started occurring to me when I went to college. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I was that role with a lot of friends too, but you know.
You didn't know it.
I don't think I knew. No, yeah. I don't think I knew. But then I started seeing my own therapist as an adult when I was just out of college and I knew.
Well, how do you separate the boundary of like, naturally we're helpers and we have a lot of good information and insight.
Yep.
So how do you separate the boundary of like, that's my quote unquote role. And also I can't be the fixer of everybody's things because that's overwhelming. And now I'm just like a raging codependent human being.
Right.
How do you do that?
So here's the thing that's true for me now. I really make a practice of seeing the wisdom or the healer in each and every individual in my life. So someone can show up and be a mess and be a good friend of mine. And I'm absolutely going to show up for them. Then ask them, what do you feel like you need? And I have to breathe through because I have a couple of friends, as we all do. There's a couple of friends in my life where I like want to swoop in there and say some stuff, and I just have to bite my tongue, because really and truly, when it comes down to it, they have their own answer.
Yeah.
I, through my own, lots of my own work that I've done for myself, like, thank goodness mm-hmm. that I still do. I just know I can sit and hold that space. I do not have to fix it, because it takes away from them. They can do their own figuring that out.
Yeah. And them fixing it. This is something that I have learned, that like my space where I feel my best is different than somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And so they could be engaging in behaviors that would feel really icky to me, but to them that they feel whatever.
Totally.
And there's a line there, because I'm not saying like somebody's like doing heroin and they feel great and I'm going to let them go do that. Like,
right.
Although there is also a line of, I can only help somebody if they want help. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, there's just some more minute experiences where I'd want to tell somebody that's not good for you. But like, who am I to say that? Because that might work for them in their space in their life,
right.
Even though it might not work for me.
That's right.
And that was a lesson I had to learn, because I don't know that you've went through this. I have never seen this in you, but I probably saw you at different spaces in your life. But I had a space in my life where I felt a little bit better than. Ugh, I don't like that I just said that.
I think that's good and but honest.
Like, there's a part of me that in the beginning, mm-hmm. it was like, I'm learning all this information and I know how family systems work and I know what you're doing. Right. And I wanted to go and tell everybody that.
Right.
But then I was not looking at what my role was and what I was doing in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I think I was being hurt by certain things, but also I was hurting other people too.
Sure.
So I went through some waves of learning my own stuff and all that stuff and learning about the world and how to step back. But also like, Catherine, you're not better than everybody else because you know how to do that. Therapists aren't better than other people.
No, we are the other people.
We're also in therapy. Right. Is the whole point. Right. What did you do before you were at the ranch? Didn't you work at you worked at Mending Hearts?
I worked at Mending Hearts, most awesome place ever. What an amazing organization. I want to say that for sure. But yep, I worked there and then I came over to the ranch.
And then you went to, do you mind saying?
No, I don't mind at all. From the ranch, I went to Milestones at OnSite. Mm-hmm. And again, incredible
so
experience.
Cool. Yeah.
Holy Moses, yeah.
And now she's on her own private practice.
That's right. Woohoo. Private practice.
Okay. So you talked about the somatics and how you love that. And mm-hmm. then I kind of talked about pulling in the drawing and the art into that. And what I know about you is you're a very creative person and you're a great artist. You actually are good. And so I want you to talk about how the creative process has been a healer for you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, especially in the past year, what have you tapped into to regulate yourself? Because we're telling you guys, therapists are people too. We've had to really zone in on our own grounding.
That's a good question. The creative process for me brings me to a whole other part of my brain. And it really is somatic at some level, because it's not about words. It's about imagery and color and texture and movement with mm-hmm. if it's paint or whatever it is. So I'm just going to be really transparent and say I felt kind of stuck creatively for, gosh, on and off for the past few years. Like, I would create art for clients that graduated the program at Milestones, which gave me great joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of was a context in which to do art, like, oh, I'm going to create this thing and I want to share with them my experience of them through their process. And that I had something to give them, and that was that. So that was kind of the level of art, quote unquote, that I would do. And I have dipped my toe back in various ways over the last year. And I'm really excited because I'm getting ready to do a creative arts process with an organization called Art and Soul. And they've been around forever. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited because it's going to be movement and visual and sound and lots of ways to get in the process.
So for you, how does that stuff actually help regulate you?
So here's how I would say it. It's like the most non-scientific thing I could ever say.
Okay.
It just gets me out of my stuff in one way and gets me into something else in another that helps me resource within me. It gets to feel exciting when you create something and it sort of brings you somewhere else, and then you get encouraged or involved in another part mm-hmm. of that process. And it just takes me out of my stuff. Like, my story's gone.
What does resource mean to you? Because that's a word that I understand and people in the field understand, but like, a lot of people are like,
what does that mean?
Yeah.
If I'm walking around like a gingerbread cutout person, can't you see it? I mean, really, we see it in Nashville. We're all walking around that way at some level. And I am feeling not resourced. I'm probably not going to have a lot of color filled up on the inside or anything. It's just going to be the outline. Mm-hmm. If I'm feeling resourced, I'm going to feel maybe some color in my feet, right? So it's grounding, mm-hmm. where I feel calmer. My breath is more even. My anxiety has gone down, which might mean my, you know, breathing, like you get that recovery breath where you feel mm-hmm. calm. And I can find humor, like mm-hmm. that resources me really well. And I don't feel scared. I don't feel anxious. So that's resourcing.
Resourcing in a nutshell is just grounding work.
It's grounding
work. How to feel more grounded in yourself and who you are, and to
totally
be able to separate yourself from the world around you too.
Yes. Not be in the story.
Yeah. Yes. I had an experience a couple of weeks ago. And now that looking back on it, I can see there was a lot of chaos happening around me. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of probably chaos in my head. But like in the front of me, everything was fine. And I remember going to work and feeling a little bit like I didn't want to go. I don't even think I had clients that day. I just was coming to work. I think maybe recording a podcast. Driving down Music Row and my heart just starts beating really fast. And yeah. I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Right.
I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack. I turned down a street and a street was blocked. And I just remember tears welling up in my eyes and me saying, why am I about to cry? Why am I about to cry? I'm not late for anything. This construction is usually here. So it's not like new. Like, why am I? And I got into my office. I sat down. I put my feet on the ground. And I took a couple deep breaths. I contemplated calling my therapist, but then said boundaries. And that's what I did, is I just had to bring myself back, because I don't even know where I was. I didn't know what was going on. I was not grounded. But resourcing to me was putting my feet on the floor and breathing. I think I wrote. When we say creativity, it's not just art. It can be anything. So I love writing. And I just wrote things out. And if I went back and looked at it, it probably makes no sense.
Right.
It wasn't like a pretty thing I would like post on Instagram. And I tell that story to say, one, again, to give you that picture that like we're constantly doing this stuff.
Yep.
And two, that like when we talk about these things, they're not these big, crazy, elusive ideas. It's like, for me, resourcing was coming to my office in a safe place, putting a candle on where I could smell something that felt safe, mm-hmm. and breathing.
Right. This makes me think about something that I did over the summer too. And it's a creative process. And it looked like this. I would take walks at the park and I would turn my video camera on slow motion and I would move it through flowers and then come back and write. And then do a mandala. So I was doing a mandala a day of just whatever the writing was. And so it doesn't have to be about art,
yeah. but,
or it is art. That's art.
That's
form
art
in its own way. And it was so healing for me. And now I'm getting to what it is I really wanted to say, I think, which is it reminded me of another part of myself that is so, I love being around this part. And that's the resourcing mm-hmm. for me. So it's whatever it looks like.
You know, in somatics, they teach you, which is one of the coolest things, that I only did the first module. I kick myself for that, because I could have done all of them for free.
Right. They would have paid.
I kicked myself. But I was like, at that point in my life, I didn't want to spend more time at work.
Yep.
Anyway, that's a tangent. We're not going to go there. But anyway, one of the things that is the most helpful thing that I've ever learned, I think, from that stuff, was when we are asking people to be in their body, and a lot of times they're resourcing in their body, I think a lot of people are like, where's the pain? Where's the pain? Where's the pain coming from?
Yeah.
And in that, you're focusing on, where does your body feel good and safe? So what feels, and I'll use this with clients all the time, of like, tell me a part of your body that feels safe to you, that feels calming, whether it's like your shaking foot feels calm,
yep.
or whether it's like, I don't know, your left earlobe, because it doesn't have like something shooting through it and it's the only part of your body that feels like it's whatever. That has been one of the most game-changing things, I think, for me and some of the work that I do with people, because so much we try to focus on what's wrong,
right,
rather than what's right.
Correct.
And that gives people an experience of like, when people are like, my body's unsafe, or I don't like myself. That's why we ask those questions. Okay, but if you did have to like one thing about yourself, what would it be? Nothing. Okay, but if you had to choose something, it's like, we need to focus on the good parts too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about the bad parts, because we want to shift and change that, but we can't shift and change it if there's nothing to hold on to.
Right.
Right. And so you're saying right now, it brings me back to a part of myself that I want to be around.
Yeah.
Because in my stuff, I don't want to be around myself. Like that day when I was driving down Music Row, if I could have jumped out of my skin, I would have.
Yeah.
And so I brought myself into a spot where like, oh, my feet feel warm and they're keeping me stuck to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
I can get down with those.
Yeah.
Body image work. Sometimes it's like my big toe is the only thing that I really like that
right.
day. But I can sink into that of like, okay, my feet are things that allow me to be grounded into the earth and allow me to walk and blah, 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 while the rest of my body feels icky. So I'm really glad you said that.
Yeah.
Of like resourcing, and a lot of that work brings you back mm-hmm. to a part of you that you actually want to be around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to comment too. You said about you're driving down Music Row or driving down the street and you don't know why, but all of a sudden you just felt like you wanted to cry. Like, why? So this may sound woo-woo to some people out there listening, but here's what I want to say to that. We are electromagnetic human, we're beings, mm-hmm. and we're all putting out some kind of wave. And I realize that's a little out there, but
no, it's not.
You're probably picking up the collective.
Yeah.
And so when we wake up and we go, oh my gosh, why today am I feeling this incredible sense of dread? My life is going really well. It's like, it feels better if we can land on something because it gives us a reason. But sometimes it's just because that's what
is out there. It doesn't have to be about me.
Doesn't have to be about you.
I want to say 2020, but like it is also 2021. Like the world is, I'm soaking in all of that.
Yeah.
Even when we go to places that might not feel icky, you're still sucking in or soaking in other people's stuff that they might not be talking about, but it's That's the right. energy. I don't think that sounds woo-woo.
We're holding space for a lot of grief.
Yeah.
And sorrow and anxiety seems to be the bigger things, right? And anger and all that stuff. And so wouldn't it be nice to feel something different? Whatever that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
However I get there.
So in a world where like not just therapists feel that, everybody feels that.
Yeah.
Good friends feel that. Mm-hmm. Partners, spouses, whatever feel that. Kids and parents feel that. Teachers feel that. Nurses feel that. So in a world where we're all, whether we are trying to or not, attracting and, mm-hmm. and sending off and pulling in all of that stuff, how do we maintain not just our sanity, but like our okayness is what I want to.
Right. Because we're our tool. We are the tool that we are.
I want there to be another tool.
I know. Like there are so many good tools to keep this tool honed.
Yeah.
And I have leaned into this year movement and sound meditation, mm-hmm. though I've fallen off the wagon lately. I will admit that. Breath work, which I absolutely love. And I've done a lot of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And one more thing too, improv. Like I joined, there's an improv group out there. They do lunchtime improv breaks and it is so much fun to be silly and laugh with a bunch of other adults.
That's what you're good at. That is what you're good at, is like full circle back to when I met you and you would be doing these psychodramas. I didn't know. I think that you were new at them at that point. Were you?
Well, I had training way back when I lived in Phoenix
with
people that had trained with Moreno, who is the man.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. The Camelback Institute. And so I had some of that training under my feet, but hadn't been, I mean, I worked in domestic violence
at
that point.
You weren't using it.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
Right. And then, but coming to the ranch,
it's what
was like,
we did. We,
that's what we do.
Well, I remember you just being like, I'm going to do this today. Like, I'm going to try this today. We're going to do this today. And you being excited about it and me being like, I hope she doesn't ask me to do something. I hope I can just watch. Like, but why I think you were so good at it and why I think you continue to be so good at this stuff is because you allow yourself to not take yourself seriously all the time.
It's the biggest thing.
You allow yourself to mess up. You allow yourself to be silly. You allow yourself space to think and breathe. And I think that translates in the work you do with clients. But like as a human being, mm-hmm. I think that is what probably has helped, this is me just making an assumption, a lot in you being able to move through some of this stuff, is there's an essence of, it's not that serious.
Right.
I'm not that serious. It doesn't have to be that serious.
Right.
So I can do an improv group and like just have fun and be like, it's an inner child kid. It's that 10-year-old who was so serious with their clients, being like, hey, since you were working at 10, we're going to give you a break and you're going to come into my lunch break and you're going to let me just like do whatever.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It is really kind of cool to see it that way. Yeah. I think that's great.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Well, this was wonderful. We could sit here as always. Well, we will go. We'll go to lunch and keep talking. Just not record it.
It was fun. This was really a lot of fun.
Also, full disclosure, we tried to do this about 15 times.
How many? 15? No, more like 25. No. Tell the truth.
And last time when we scheduled this, you were. I said, okay, I can't wait to see you. You said, we'll see.
I know.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. And if people hear you and they live in Tennessee, are you still taking on virtual people?
I am. Virtual people. I'm just starting to see people in person very slow.
Okay. And people are like, oh, I want to talk to her. Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
So they can look me up on my website, janetheilbronn.com. H-E-I-L-B-R-O-N-N. I'm also part of a group called the Lotus Center. And we are a group of folks with all kinds of practitioners and different modalities. And you can look that up on the internet.
Okay.
TheLotusCenter.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Look me up.
All right. Well, thank you. We're going to go to lunch. I hope you guys enjoyed this, and I'll talk to you guys on Wednesday.